Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm talking with Barney Banks.
Coming out of university, I knew I wanted to be a dancer. So I just went 100% all in. Okay, if I'm going to do this, let's do it properly. You know, I started getting noticed by other people who were choreographers saying, oh, you did X Factor, didn't you? Okay, cool. Well, we trust you to do this job because...
You've skipped over a few other things. You've done modeling, right?
Yeah, that kind of goes hand in hand with dancing. Those industries kind of couple together.
You managed to go viral doing very menial tasks, but in a fun way around your baby.
So... this is one thing that you kind of get caught up in a little bit, trying to be a talent in any industry, is establishing a brand for yourself, which is such a cringy thing to say, but ultimately it is what you're doing.
I can see why Barney might not be as popular, but I think Barney's a cool name. It's unique, original.
I said, oh, I'm really excited for the new Spider-Man game. I've got the new God of War and Assassin's Creed comes out soon. And they just went, you're really a basic bitch when it comes to games, aren't you? And I was like, yes, I am. Yep. I really am.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Barney beyond the game.
Yeah, all the time. Just Y or then just I-E. Y. Oh, they're IE and it's yeah. EY. In America, Barney, and they're like, Barney? Like Barney and Clyde? Like, no, Barney. And then I have to do that awkward thing of doing the American accent. And
Barney.
And then they're like, Barney. Oh, like the dinosaur. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. Thanks.
Well, I think that's a good place to start. Let's introduce yourself.
I knew you were going to do that.
So you are Barney. Hello. Barney Banks. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm very excited for this because we mentioned before you got here that you and I were chatting while we were at Gamers 8 about how we both wanted to start a podcast.
Yes.
And we've both managed to do it. And now we're here. You're here on Beyond the Game. How are you doing?
I'm okay. My son has just turned one. Turns one on Friday.
It's taken a minute to talk about your son.
Yeah, because I'm like, am I okay? Let's first talk about the parenting. It's a very 50-50 coin flip. I'm great. I'm very happy with how work is going. Quite lacking of sleep, and that affects everything. So if it's a bad night of sleep and he wakes up twice, three times in the night, it's a bad day.
I thought you were about to say if it's a bad podcast, blame Rocket. I have not slept. No, so you said work, you know, we normally start about the journey to where you are now, but I think to set the context of the journey, we need to know about what you do now because it's so many different things. In fact, parenting is one of your kind of work things because you make content about being a parent. So tell us about all the different bits and bobs you do for work.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll go back. Let's go back slightly work-wise. Coming out of university, if we want to touch on, you know, when I was younger as well, but we'll skip a little bit and go to coming out of university, I knew I wanted to be a dancer. So I just went 100% all in. Okay, if I'm going to do this, let's do it properly. Flew myself out to LA, trained with a lot of dancers out there at these, you know, big dance studios that they have because LA is the home for that. Trained with Chris Brown's choreographer and Justin Bieber's choreographer. I say trained with, I took their class, they were teaching, and went into the dance industry when I came back to the UK. I went to an open audition for X Factor as a backup dancer and then got that job. And then from that, it's then this either a snowball effect or like a, you know, I started getting noticed by other people who were choreographers saying, oh, you did X Factor, didn't you? Okay, cool. Well, we trust you to do this job, because 90% of the time with a dance job, the choreography or the style of the job is actually very simplified. It's not difficult. So it's, can we trust you to behave professionally on set? And do you have the competence of doing this choreography? Okay, we've seen you do this, you'll be able to do this. So actually kind of word of mouth and that area of the industry is actually very, very profound in the dance world.
I guess with choreography, it's like one of those where, same thing with acting and stuff, like learning lines, anyone can do it. It's just recognizing that you're willing to go above and beyond if you feel like you haven't got it yet. Because it's like, okay, you need to go away and learn these lines for tomorrow. The unprofessional person will be like, yeah, I'll be fine, I'll do it. And then they turn up and they're like, sorry, I need to do a retake. Oh, sorry, I can't do that, I need to do a retake. Whereas the person who's super professional will be like, I'm going to meticulously practice this until I get this every single time, otherwise it's a problem. I guess that's the same with choreography. It's like, well, anyone could learn this if they're willing to put the time in. And it's about that self-recognition of, if I overdo this, I will be able to do it. If I underdo this, I'm not going to do a good job. So I better make sure I get it right.
Yeah, famously in that regard, Natalie Portman is very famous for having this work ethic that she says her acting coach taught her, is she learns the whole script. She doesn't learn her lines. She learns the whole script. And there's a few accounts of people being very annoyed with her on set because she's telling them what their lines are when they forget them on set. So you're acting across from her, you forget a line and she goes, it's this. And ooh, then they're like, ooh. But yeah, that's got what she's famous for. Yeah, I mean, got her jobs, very professional, of course, and she's amazing. So fair play to her. Slipped a disc when I was 26 on set dancing in a music video. So that's end of dancing career. I would have carried on, I think, for another couple of years, but I felt like I had achieved enough in that side of my career that I could kind of think about expanding into other things, and presenting was the main one that sprung to mind. I approached Heart Radio as, you know, a complete rookie. I've made this demo, can you listen to it? Send it to them maybe 15 times before they said, come in, do a demo with our setup and we'll see how you fare. I must have done that about 5 or 6 times, gone in and done practicing, showed that I was interested. It was in Whitstable in Kent. And then maybe the 6th time I went in, they said, we're actually closing down the radio station. And Heart went from 9 stations to 3 almost overnight. They just, so many people got axed. And so I was like, well, that's my journey over. I'll go to a more independent radio station. Went to Hoxton Radio, which is in Spitalfields Market in East London, and got my own show there. And then centered it kind of around esports. So it was more of a podcasty thing. And then that's how I found out about esports, by interviewing Julia Hardy. The legend herself. She is lovely, isn't she? Chatted with her. She told me about esports, Xbox On, League of Legends, CSGO. And I was just blown away by everything that she was saying and said, I have to work in this industry. Started knocking on doors, emailing, you know, companies like ESL, Gfinity, all these people. And then after 2 years of emailing, got my first bite. Someone had bailed out of a Clash of Clans hosting gig. So I got a phone call. Do you play Clash of Clans? Do you understand it? Could you host it? Yeah. Never played the game before in my life.
So we're very similar in that way. Did you know about my entry into Clash Royale?
No. Go on, tell me.
So I did Clash Royale and it was because it was the same studio that did Rocket League. They asked Shogun, who was the EU commentator who was out there at the time, like, hey, do you want to stick around and do Clash Royale after Rocket League? And he was like, I want to go home. I'm sick of being in America. If you want to go speak to someone, message my friend Gregan, because they were looking for European talent and they didn't have anyone really in Clash Royale at the time. So they contacted me and I did an interview, and I kid you not, I went, I've never played the game before, but I'd love to learn it. And I did a little like showreel thing for it, and they're like, we'll fly you out for an interview. Did the interview. I had to commentate the game, and at the time I was revising for my medical exams, which were in a month's time. So on the flight over was revising, the flight back revising. And when I did the commentary test live, I didn't know the name of any of the troops. I was very open about it. I called a mega minion a flying teapot because I was like, it looks like a flying teapot. And then I went, oh, the stone golem. And they're like, close, it's a golem. Literally the whole thing. I don't know how I got the job, but I think the there was one person who was like, no, he will learn it and he can already like bullshit his way through it without
play by play,
but
yeah,
without actually knowing any of the things. So if he learns it, think how much better it could be. So I went back, became a host, and then that's my first big event I did. And
wow.
So we both had that like,
nice.
let's do Clash. I don't know anything about it, but I'd love to do it.
Yeah, I think I just, it's a sense of over preparation. I just wrote pages and pages and pages of notes, all on these cue cards that are in front of me on the desk that I could quickly glance down at, because I would see that the camera setup of my one shot that was in front of me and then the two shot to my right was of the casters to my left. So when I saw the red light go on their camera, I could quickly look down and shuffle through my notes. Right, what's the next bit? What's the next bit? Who are we going to be talking about? Who's the org that's going to be playing next? Or, you know, what's their preferred troop setup and things like that? So I could, you know, quickly fumble my way through that. And I guess it's just being a host. You don't have to be an expert in the game. You just have to be able to carry the show with energy and with enthusiasm and, you know, positive vibes and whatever. That's kind of how I viewed it. And I think that also it's, as the host, you're laying the tracks down, and then the casters, analysts, they're the train. So as long as you can lay the tracks down fine, the train will keep moving.
Yeah, because we got to work together at Gamers 8 where you were the host for Rocket League. And one of the big things I noticed with you was you were willing to not know enough and let the people around you shine because of it.
Yeah.
But with that, there's an element of looking out for support, right? So
of course,
you came to me one evening and you're writing questions. So like everyone's just chilling out by the pool,
having
a great time, and you're there.
Sounds like we work really hard, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Chilling by the pool.
And then you were like, I'm writing questions right now. So you're working late into the evening, trying to find out what to do. And you've been like, I've been researching these players. I found this, and this about them. Is this a good question? What should I ask? And then I would be like, well, try asking this, try asking that.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you deliver those questions. And I think the first one I remember that was, it was like, so we saw you do this in this event. Do you think, it was a scrub thing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
scrub versus scrub.
So we saw scrub versus scrub on the most recent event. Well, who's going to win out of Atomic versus Atomic? And like, you delivered it. Like you're a seasoned Rocket League fan and you've done it all. But like, I remember I was speaking about it the night before, and you're like, oh, that's brilliant. Let me just rewrite the wording of this. Let's do it this way. It's like that kind of quality of a host is that recognizing how to work with the team to bring out the best in the team and then let them support you in your job.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. I think one of the things that I would add to that as well is especially when I was doing Clash of Clans, going back to that, is one thing that I learned just by watching other esports shows and watching how other hosts operate on camera, I thought to myself, don't be afraid to ask the stupid questions, because you'll always have casuals watching the show. It's not always esports veterans who are watching the shows and people who are diehards of the game. So I would just never be afraid to ask the casters, could you go into a little bit more detail about that? Or, you know, this particular character that you've chosen to use for this, or, you know, the pro has chosen to use this, can you break it down for people who are watching that may be a little less seasoned in this game? And then, so you're almost their compatriot, the person who's watching, you are their friend by saying, look, they might not have understood this. I definitely don't understand this, but they might have not. So why don't you actually simplify it rather than just talking about the peak elements of this game? When you're at this top level, this is how you behave and this is how you play the game. People might not know, that may not resonate with everyone. So it's always good to dumb it down and bring it down to a level that maybe I would understand. And then that helps me with questioning further on as well. Because I think that pros don't always want to be asked, you know, in that 16 seconds in and you did that and, you know, you did a musty flip into a blah, blah, blah.
I always find it funny with those questions, because a lot of the time the players just be like, I just did it.
Yeah, whatever.
It was just the thing that I did at the time. And it's the analysts and the casters who are overthinking the game. And but anyway, we'll get back to hosting and stuff later on. But
we've
spoken about your journey. So you mentioned you did dancing. Mm. You've skipped over a few other things. You've done modeling, right?
Yeah, that kind of goes hand in hand with dancing. Those industries kind of couple together. Mm-hmm. The agencies that you join, when you get an agent as a dancer, typically they get modeling jobs through as well. So if you're the right height or the right build or look or whatever they're looking for, you tend to quickly learn in the modeling industry that every audition you go to or every casting you go into, you walk into a room and there's about 25 different carbon copies of you. So ultimately, something that my mum taught me when she was young, not when she was younger, something my mum taught me when I was younger, going into that industry, she just said, look, you'll find 20, 30, 40 carbon copies of you in the room when you walk in. Be the person they want to work with. Be the easygoing one. Don't make things a hassle. Go in, be mates with them, you know, have a conversation, and then they'll want to work with you because they could choose between 20 people who look the same, have the same measurements. So how are they going to remember you? Just be a cool person. Yeah. Cool person.
That's actually a really good bit of advice. And I learned this through a friend of mine, which she gave an example about herself that made me realize you always want to be the memorable one in any interview. So as a friend of mine at uni, she was an engineer. So firstly, she's a woman in a male dominated space. She said, any interview she goes to, she'll be remembered as the woman who walked in. So she's already got that standout factor. So if she's similar to someone else, she'll stand out. She was a very lovely person, very chatty, but her name was Hope. And she said, they're always going to remember the girl called Hope in an engineering space because that's going to be, oh, you're called Hope. So as long as you do the other bits right, you stand out. So that's what you're saying. Is that as long as you do the job bit right, which for you in that case, you'd already done by being the height measurements
the right
you
height
were
measurements
and, look, and looking good and all that kind of stuff. But the standout factor there is that. And I think that's the same thing in any industry is like anyone who goes, oh, I was as good as them. You know, I don't know why they got it. I didn't get it. You got to find that thing that makes you stand out and find your specific angle that you can do to stand out in that space.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I mean, if you excel in your job, nevertheless, we've worked with people. I'm sure everyone that's probably listening to this or watching this has worked with someone and you thought, God, I really don't like working with that person. That person's a bit of an arsehole. But if they excel at their job, then, you know, people will always get hired for being incredible at their job. But if you're in a space or in, you know, a particular type of job where there's multiple people that could do that job, by being the person that stands out by just being a kind person or someone that's easy to work with, someone that's easygoing, does their job well enough, then that's cool. It doesn't mean like be mediocre, but be nice. But if you can excel at your job and you're a nice person, it's a win-win.
I guess, so this is actually an interesting question because I could have asked this to anyone. It's something I've wanted to bring up on this podcast at any point.
Oh dear.
And I think it's suitable for you because I think it probably has applied to you at points. Mm. One of the big things that makes a lot of people stand out is the way they look. For you, you're in an industry where looking good was just like the basic level of what was expected as a model.
Yeah.
But do you think in other spaces where it's not as important, so hosting it is somewhat important, you know, when I look good on camera, but like, do you think like the whole pretty privilege as it's described or being good looking and all that kind of thing, do you think that is a factor in deciding whether you get selected for things?
I thought that it was a hindrance coming into the esports industry when I was kind of messaging people and showing, you know, certain reels that I had created out and about and, you know, just, you know, hanging outside the Copper Box Arena, pretending that I was hosting Call of Duty and making fake show reels, you know, fake it till you make it kind of thing. I was thinking, are people watching this and going, who's this guy that, you know, has little to no experience and models that are like, why is he trying to come into our esports industry? Clearly he's not a gamer. I thought that it lowers people's expectations of you as a genuine, of having genuine interest in that space. Maybe he's just trying to get into esports because he knows it's a growing industry. Mm. So I thought that legitimacy was lowered because of the way I looked. Mm. I mean, I didn't do anything to, you know, try and dull it down. I wasn't going to any extremes.
Maybe if just I wear like, start, glasses like, put, yeah, and like, you a bad know, haircut. Let my beard grow
I never
out.
Did anything like weird like that. But I did think in the back of my mind, do I think that this is... And there were sometimes actually when I started doing a few jobs in my esports career, there were a few little mentions of that. And I don't know if it was just digs from people having a bit of a joke or if it was... You know, why are you here?
Mm. It's interesting you mentioned that because I have a friend who applied for a job at an unnamed gaming store that's very popular in the UK.
Yeah.
And they got told they didn't look like a gamer. And it's because they are a pretty person.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they don't have coloured hair. They don't have nerdy looks. They don't have tattoos
or piercings,
whatever it is. And they wanted that look. Whereas if they're too pretty, people wouldn't approach them and be like, hey, have you got any advice around games that I could play? So I think there is an element of that, of like fitting the look. So I guess in that case, it's not necessarily pretty privilege, it's pretty privilege. It's fitting the look privilege.
Stereotype, like fitting a certain stereotype would benefit you getting the job in the first place. But then if you go the long run and you prove that you are actually genuinely, you know, heavily influenced by that industry and, you know, it's part of your day-to-day life, I think you're the better for it going in the long run. Because now people know that I am a gamer. I have been a gamer since I was, whatever, 6 years old. and just came from a different industry, coming from dancing and modeling as well, immediately that pretty privilege is just stamped on your forehead. Oh, you're a model and now you want to be in esports. Oh, okay, really? Do you really play games? But it also comes with, coupled with a bit of social uncertainty that I've had my whole life. And not, that's not stemming from like the looks side of things. I've always had this weird sense of social uncertainty of having friends at school, and I've always been a sociable person, a chatty person, but I would then not really know if someone was a true friend or not, or even just a friend in general. I remember, I have this distinct memory of my primary school going up to two people who I was friends with and saying, "Are we friends?" How weird is that? And I just, and thinking back on it, I was like, oh God, I weirdly had that social uncertainty all the way through till maybe I was 17 years old at secondary school. And then like a bolt of lightning, something just clicked. And I saw a TV show called The Wade Robson Project. And it was a dancing show about this guy. He's Britney Spears' choreographer. He goes out, he teaches some choreography really quickly to three people who are the contestants. And they compete by doing the choreography back. And then if they proceed to the next stage, each challenge becomes different. And as soon as I saw that show, I was like, I want to be a dancer. And then I felt this weird social independence of, I know exactly what I want to do when I'm when I grow up now, or, you know, I want to know exactly what I want my career trajectory to be. Wow.
That's a tough word.
Yeah. The career trajectory that I really wanted was ingrained in me from that moment. And then I have had this weird sense of independence. Like, it doesn't really matter if I have loads, an abundance of friends at school. I know exactly what I want to do. And then I started to sneak. I went to a very small boarding school growing up, and I would sneak off on Saturdays when everyone would be playing in competitions in sport like rugby, football, cricket, athletics. I'd sneak off and go to dance lessons at Pineapple Studios in Covent Garden. Hmm. And I didn't tell anyone.
I mean, that
I know. Billy Elliot story.
It's a great story if you then become a dancer. If it's not, then you're just a big old rebel.
I know. What an idiot. What's this guy doing?
But so we mentioned the gaming since you were six.
Yes.
So, typically, we start this podcast off asking people about their gaming journey growing up. So yeah, you mentioned there since six. Where did it start for you?
So, you know, the grey, chunky brick Game Boy was probably my first thing I ever got my hands on. Mm-hmm. You know, Mario, Super Mario was probably the first game I played. But then the first real, wow, I'm loving this, was the Nintendo 64. I don't actually know how old I was when I got it. I have just... basing it off where I lived at the time, I think I must have been around 7 or 8 years old. And I think the first handful of games that I got on there were Mario 64, GoldenEye, and Diddy Kong Racing, and Wave Race, which was a jet skiing game. And I was just glued to them. And I think in terms of time played, I would say GoldenEye or WrestleMania were probably the two games that I played the most. Like growing up. And so that, you know, I just sit in our little study that we had at home and just be glued to the Nintendo any chance that I got. And then I didn't actually get a console after the Nintendo 64 until the PS2.
I mean,
that's only one skip, right? Because then it was PS1 and then PS2 after the 64.
Yeah, I think
PS2
was around the same era as GameCube. So
okay,
in terms of the next Nintendo console, it was around the same era. But I think PS2 came out a little bit after the GameCube. I don't know if that's true. I might be completely wrong. We could get that fact checked, but I don't even know if it matters that much. Should we get it fact checked?
Probably not.
PlayStation 2 or GameCube came out first?
There, I'm going to take a punt and say GameCube was first. I think you think the same, don't you?
Yeah, I think, because I think GameCube was the console that I played around that time.
Oh, okay. Did you play that the most then, do you think?
Yeah. And then...
that was the weirdest controller ever. As if the Nintendo 64 wasn't weird enough with the three handles and you had to choose where you wanted to put your hands.
Well, Nintendo love a niche controller, don't they?
They do, don't they? They make things difficult on purpose, I swear.
Mm-hmm.
Fact check, have we got it?
Ooh! There we go, both wrong.
So PS2 was probably my favorite console, I would say, as well.
I think a lot of people really resonate with the PS2 because it lasted probably one of the longest of the PlayStations, didn't it?
Over 10 years? Because the PS4 to 5 was 10 years, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Another fact check. I'm sorry.
I mean, at this point, we sound
I'm
like
ruining
we
this
got
podcast.
A clue what's going on. So you played PlayStation 2. Yeah. What were the games for that? You mentioned the Nintendo 64 games.
Oh my goodness! The games on the PlayStation 2. I think the one that really was the game changer for me was San Andreas. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas was just being able to explore that world.
So
and
a trend on this
world.
Podcast
is everyone saying that?
Is asking what age were you playing Grand Theft Auto at?
Oh, okay. So San Andreas, I would have been living, I think, yeah, 13 or 14.
See, my mum listens to this podcast. She's going to feel like such a hero because she's
like... Because she made you wait.
I didn't let my son play any of these.
No way.
And I have an older brother, 3.5 years older. So that's typically like the, oh, I've been influenced by my older brother.
Sure, game. I had
to be fair,
brother.
I probably played Call of Duty when I was like 12, 13, watching my brother. So
I think that actual, going back to what we were talking about with the social uncertainty, I think a bit of that stemmed from my older brother as well. He... massive overachiever. He's about three or four school years older than me, but about 3 years older than me. My brother was head boy. My brother was captain of rugby. He was captain of football, captain of cricket. And going into school, going like joining the same school that he was a part of, just expectations were just immediately thrust upon me. And I think that created a bit of anxiety for me.
Just a moment.
Yeah.
To my brother, if you're watching this, that's the kind of role model I expected out of you. But you just got good at rugby, didn't you? So maybe a little bit more head boy as well next time. Yeah?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know if you wanted it, because everything that I would accomplish at school was always overshadowed by the fact that my brother was, you know, the wonder kid.
So he was a bit too good.
Yeah, I think head boys, you know, especially at a small boarding school, head boy carries a lot of weight. Mm. And your responsibilities actually as head boy are quite significant.
Should be on the payroll.
Yeah, exactly. You basically should be. But, you know, he's a great guy. I don't think me and my brother really got on that well when we were younger. And now, as you know, I'm 31 now. So after 25, 26 years old, I think we really started to mesh as people, and we started to kind of see eye to eye. But we didn't for quite a long time when we were younger. I don't know if I had a chip on my shoulder about the fact that he was an overachiever and I kind of wasn't. And you know what? It didn't bother me. And like I said, actually, up until 17, I was a pretty middle-of-the-run student. I didn't really accomplish huge amounts in rugby or in sport in general. The only thing I was really good at was drama. And academically, I wasn't particularly strong either. But then as soon as I found that dancing side of things, nothing else bothered me.
I guess
it's weird that something just clicked and I was like, that is exactly what I want to do and I don't care about anything else.
I guess traditionally that kind of route is weighted a little bit differently to the I'm successful in sport, I'm successful academically, I'm successful in status at school with things like head boy and that kind of thing.
So then they become fuck ups when they're older.
And then you go off and you start being super successful with your dancing, you know, like I'm sure at that point, you know, when people are asking how the kid's doing, they're like, oh, my son's dancing on X Factor.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it all switches because that's the oh, they've broken into what is an impossible industry to break into for the average person. So yeah, it is a weird one. I mean, I joked about my brother. Having an older brother is, as a role model, is amazing and I think that's why siblings, so many people talk about their siblings. Say, example, did your brother game with you a lot?
Yeah, actually, depending on the game, we both had a huge love for wrestling. So WWE, we'd watch WrestleMania every year together. And then also with the games, we'd play most of them together, I think. Grand Theft Auto, we'd... in the missions that were particularly difficult, my brother would drive the car and I would aim the shooting out of the window. So I'd have I'd just have the right analog stick in my hand and I'd be aiming the shots and he'd just be focused on driving. Because that multitasking, that kind of thing, was really difficult.
That's why tank games have always been quite hard, isn't it?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Tank games, I feel like they're the hardest games to play for most people because of the multitasking. It's almost like roguelikes as well. All that kind of like...
Roguelikes? What's that?
Have you not played a roguelike before?
No.
So it's a... it's like... Binding of Isaac, have you played that?
No. So, am I a real gamer? No.
I don't know what the definition... Could you find the definition of roguelike games? Because it's hard to describe, but it's like you're a character who is entering a dungeon, I guess.
Okay.
And it'll often be a randomly generated dungeon.
Yeah.
And you have weapons and a lot of enemies coming at you.
Is this like a 2D game that goes across the screen?
I mean...
That's what I'm imagining right now.
No, so it's like you're in like rooms... and then you fight off in the room.
Yeah.
You ever see, you know, there's like all the mobile apps where it's like, I built up so much power and I could destroy everything around me. And it's like, they're running around, there's just loads of things running at them and they just destroy all the weapons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
those kinds of games.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Enter the Gungeon, I think, is another one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so you, with those games, you build up weapons. I don't know why I'm, why am I explaining this?
Was it something to do with like the mechanics of the game?
Because traditionally those games, you have to move whilst also firing
and
your weapons.
Yeah.
And so like that combining of movement.
Left brain and right brain.
Yeah, at the same time. Anyway, you were saying you were driving the car and you were controlling the weapons.
My brother would drive the car. I'd aim out the window, you know, with the shooting. And then that would kind of be us playing games together.
Co-ops.
So, yeah, I wouldn't mind sitting back and kind of watching someone play as well. I was one of those people. I wouldn't always have to be heavily involved. I think the game that I played the most co-op of was probably Halo 2, because you could play the campaign co-op. Mm. That was like the first one that was a really good AAA game that you could also play co-op. So I'd go around to friends' houses and play. So probably me and my brother, not so much, but we were both into gaming, and his passion for it, his passion for sport just superseded his passion for gaming. So he just excelled at that.
Mm-hmm. I guess similar to my brother then, because he's now a PE teacher. I'm a whatever I can call myself in gaming.
Yeah, what can we call ourselves?
But yeah, we used to play games together. He was normally better at the shooter games. I was normally better at the... We were kind of even on Mario Kart. You'd probably say he's better.
This is such a brotherly conversation. And then, I was better at Mario Kart. He was better at shooters.
Yeah, I was better at Smash. And then Wii Sports was an interesting one.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The anyway, controller ends up going
bowling,
flying.
I reckon I beat him. Yeah.
I hope I beat my brother at every game now. I really hope I would. I'd be very disappointed in myself if I didn't. But yeah, my brother's a golf agent now. Yeah, Full Swing is definitely going to put his... Have you seen that? That's on Netflix now.
Oh, yeah. That's like the Drive to Survive for golf.
For golf. Yeah, it just was released last week.
Do you want to propose a Drive to Survive for Rocket League?
I'd love to propose any kind of documentary series that's within gaming, whether or not it focuses on the actual gameplay side of things and the pro side of things, or behind the scenes, or... you know, production, hosts. I think you could do a different episode on each thing. But I feel like that's what a lot of companies are veering towards now. I think that, especially leading into esports tournaments, a lot of people who are listening or watching this will understand that there's a lot of pre-production that goes into these shows. And there's a lot of things called media days where we sit down with the pros, we talk to them about how they're feeling about the tournament, what are you expecting, this person's your rival, so are you excited to go up against them, and you know, this player's not playing particularly well right now, so you're gonna have to compensate. There's all these similar days where we create media content for in between matches, or to use as a buffer for the show. Now these media days are becoming very samey, and every single esport is producing the same style content, and I think people are starting to get bored. So what I think is going to start happening is production companies are going to start leaning into the pre-production a bit more, maybe investing a little bit more in it and creating some more exciting stuff, because Call of Duty hit it out the park, and that's only because the orgs invest in it. It's not the production companies like Esports Engine that lean into it. It's actually the orgs do it. So if you're into Call of Duty, Optic are a prime example. They have their own documentary team and they produce content that is far superior to what the actual production companies for the tournaments produce. Well, so actually...
Now we're talking about it, I said we should do one for Rocket League. I remember E-League at Season 7 World Championship did a documentary around several teams, including my team that ended up winning it. So therefore, there is a documentary out there that I've never actually seen.
Oh, what?
That's on
You
American
might be in it.
TV.
Do you feature as well?
Probably. I don't know.
Dude, you gotta watch that.
Yeah. So I need to find that somewhere, because it's on American TV and I haven't VPN'd it. So... if someone knows where that is, the E-League documentary on RLCS Season 7 Worlds, because we produced our own one.
Yeah.
And then we also produced one for our investors. So we had three documentaries being filmed at the same time for the players, which is almost a bit too much, because then the players are a bit like, oh, got to do another interview.
Yeah, exactly. And also, yeah, the players have, you have a certain amount of allotted time with each player or each org. And so you've got to be very time sensitive with what you create. And the fact that everything's a bit, I wouldn't say mediocre, the production value is amazing. It's just, it's all a sit down interview of, yeah, I'm really excited to play on, you know, it's just, it doesn't hit the same anymore and you need to get a bit creative with it. We spoke about Clash of Clans and Clash Royale earlier in this episode.
We did, yeah.
I have a gift for you.
Okay, so here's the gift. If people can see the set right now, I'm just filling time while the gift is being brought out. This is new and exciting. We have never had a gift before, but we do have a little Clash Royale / Clash of Clans. I guess they're in this, both of them, statue here.
Ooh.
Which is, oh, hello.
So I hosted Clash Fest in 2022,
uh-huh.
Which is, or was, the Clash of Clans and Clash Royale huge kind of tournament that they put on. They called it Clash Fest. So there is a figurine that represents Clash of Clans and Clash Royale for you. And it is I think a figurine of a target. Open it. What are you staring at the box for?
I'm reading it. It says, warning, choking hazard. This is not a toy.
That's why I can't give it to my son. Yeah. You're second best.
Okay.
Just kidding. Thank you, Rocket. The great thing about working for Supercell, who, you know, owns Brawl Stars, Clash of Clans, Clash Royale, is they have so much merch, but they don't sell it. Yeah. Anyway, so it's actually quite valuable if you manage to get something from there.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
And there you are, sir.
Oh, this is everything.
Got yourself a Clash of Clans t-shirt. I wear things oversized, so I got an XL. So don't feel like I'm just saying that you're an XL.
I mean, I am an XL these days.
But I wear everything baggy, so I like to get an XL anyway. So there you go. Clash of Clans and Clash Royale.
I'll wear that on tomorrow's pod. So woohoo! I'm actually filming the next pod after you tomorrow, so I'll be wearing that on that.
Oh, busy boy.
There we go. Well, that can...
No worries.
I'm not lobbing the target, don't worry.
There you go. See you later. I thought it might, you know, suit the figurine wall that we have behind us.
This is great. Because, I mean, even... Because this is a Clash lore piece, right? It's from Clash. But it doesn't... You don't look at it and go, oh my God, that's a Clash thing.
No, exactly.
So yeah, it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's for both Clash of Clans and Clash Royale. So it represents the Archer.
So this is interesting because I spoke to you about the idea that when I had this podcast, I was going to get people to bring a gift along.
Ah, did you actually? I don't actually remember us saying that, so that's cool.
Oh, that's cool. You just did that.
Yeah, I did that anyway.
So I had this idea that every guest was going to bring a gift along and that'd be like a tradition. And then as the episodes go on, we build out the wall and more stuff happens. But I thought, do you know what? I don't want to put more burden on my guests.
Yeah, and you don't want to expect or yeah, exactly.
You set a precedent. We get gifts here now. Oh, there we go.
Well, good news is if you become a parent and you come on my podcast, you can bring me a gift.
Yeah, I'll probably just bring you some, like, I don't know.
Nappies? I was going to say diapers. Nappies. I'm not American.
Yeah, nappies or some milk
nappies,
powder.
Wipes. You can never have too many wipes or nappies, trust me.
We'll get onto your TikTok in a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Let me remove this out of the way.
I'm just going to have a little gift.
There we go. Before we move on to your TikTok and talking about that and going viral on TikTok, let's talk a bit about your top five games. So we ask every guest, what are their top five games?
Okay.
It could be for whatever reason you want, whether it's memories of playing it, whether it's given you a career, whether it's because you just really like the lore of the game, whatever it is. Top five games.
Top five, and they don't really need to be in particular order, right?
No, you can do it how you want.
Yeah, okay. I would say that nostalgia game, I would probably go with... Mario Kart on the Nintendo 64 because that is something that I would play multiplayer with my family. My brother and my dad would even get involved because he loves racing. So anything to do with cars, my dad gets involved in them. So there's always like little family inside jokes between us.
Asking producer Harry, was it Ian who brought up Mario 64? It was, wasn't it? Because he had the Wario Stadium. Yeah. Well, it must be...
Wario Stadium. Yeah, there's like a cheat that you can jump the wall in Wario Stadium. So someone can do like a... You can do a lap in like 16 seconds or something.
What is it? Yeah, he's the best one ever. I actually think we should make a whole thing where you and him play each other in Mario Stadium.
Oh my God. But yeah, those new Mario Kart games that are out on the Nintendo
Switch.
No, not even... Yeah, it is the Switch.
We can play later if you want.
Oh, mate, some of the people that produce content online, I've watched like some of the fastest laps ever done. It is such a hard game now. It's nowhere near like what Mario Kart used to
be. Yeah, they got 200cc now, which you actually have to break in.
Yeah, so breaking and like, you know, taking corners a certain way to get extra boost. And, yeah. But I don't have the time for that anymore.
Mario 64.
So I'd say Mario Kart in the Nintendo 64 is definitely one. I would also say probably for most hours played, Call of Duty Black Ops 3.
Ooh,
because
Ops
3. I was huge fan of the introduction of jetpacks. I thought it added like an extra element to the game. I was so gutted when they went back to World War.
I think you're going to be one of the few out there. Yeah, I feel like that was one of the games which people really disliked because of the mechanics. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Advanced Warfare introduced jetpacks and everyone was like, maybe. And Black Ops 3 just exploded. And I thought it was amazing. I think the amount of hours I played with a group of friends of mine that we were all kind of in the same area. We were all dancers and we all played video games. It was not many of us. And so we'd always play together. That was very nostalgic for me and also just played an outrageous amount of that. And then I'd say my other three games that I would choose. I mean, I did a film degree when I was at university, at Nottingham University. So I think that cinematography plays a big role for me when I watch a game and the narrative of the game as well. So storyline, cinematography. So I would say my favorite game of all time that I think I've played has been Ghost of Tsushima.
That sounds like a pretty game.
Have you not played it?
No, but it sounds like it's
It's basically Assassin's Creed as a samurai. That's essentially what it is, okay. In samurai times. Cinematography is unreal. Yeah, they definitely paid a huge amount of attention to the visuals of that game. And I'm fairly certain it was made by Square Enix.
Okay.
So that's one of them. I would say Red Dead 2.
Stumpy said Red Dead 2.
I've still not completed it, but I would actually probably say Red Dead Redemption, not the second one, because I completed Red Dead Redemption, one of the only games that's almost made me cry. That ending is amazing of that game, for those of you who know what I'm talking about.
I think that game, again, with you said about cinematography, that's one of the most beautiful games out there, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, even, you know, Uncharted 4, cinematography plays a huge part in that game. And it was absolutely fascinating to see it, especially as someone that's watched National Treasure, and it falls under that kind of that theme. I'd probably finalize it.
No, Uncharted 4 not in top 5.
Close,
okay.
I would probably say Assassin's Creed Black Flag tops it. Okay. I just had the most fun playing that storyline. You're basically playing as a pirate in an Assassin's Creed game. It's awesome. But I also think that Assassin's Creed Mirage, the new game that's about to come out, is probably going to be the best Assassin's Creed game.
Interesting. I was just interested in hearing the kind of games you went for. So you've
More RPG really than competitive. I played a lot of Apex Legends and I really enjoyed it. I played a fair bit of Rocket League as well.
Uh-huh.
But I like a game that draws me into the storyline and makes me want to play more because of progressing through the campaign and the narrative of the game, as opposed to always playing multiplayer. I feel like it's, especially now, because of being a parent, I don't have the luxury of choosing when I get to play a video game. I also need a video game that I can pause. Exactly. Pausing is essential. So that's why this time right now, February the 22nd right now.
Something like that, yeah.
Harry Potter Legacy couldn't have come out at a better time.
So you've been
playing
that.
Because I can
pause it. You can pause it. Yeah. So interesting, a lot of your stories were kind of real world, but they're not fully real world. You know, like they're based on the real world, but there might be something about them that makes it a bit more exciting. Yeah. Like,
I love an element of realism.
Yeah.
I get a bit, I can't click with like a Final Fantasy or even like Elden Ring, which so many people have said is so amazing. Some point in my life, I'm going to pick up Elden Ring and give it a go, but it just doesn't hit me the same way as, you know, an Assassin's Creed, where they try and be as realistic with the scaling of walls and things like that.
So I've always noticed with myself, I'm at the opposite end of the spectrum, whereas I don't like real world.
Okay.
So I've always liked games that aren't based in the real world because I find them to be more immersive for me, where I feel like I'm escaping from the real world.
It's into like a fantasy. Yeah.
So like, I feel like that is something that is quite traditionally looked at as, from people that, I like this one because it's based off of humans. Like my brother's like you, where he's like, I want it to feel like it's real. He loves PUBG. It's like, it feels like it's real.
Yeah. You get shot 3 times and you're dead.
Yeah.
That's so quick.
I love COD.
Or even, you know, people that like to play Grand Theft Auto because you're playing as a person in a city committing crimes.
Well, you know, some people have got that little fantasy they want to fulfill.
Now the people create servers online and you each have a role.
A little bit of role play.
In that server, trying to make it as real as possible. So you're a policeman. So if a crime goes down, you have to go and hunt them down.
Yeah, proper careers out there.
I quite like that. That's quite cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's very popular out there, but that's your top 5 games.
Yes.
I think some replicas from other people, but still very unique.
Oh,
I've yet
thank
to have you. Two people I've been like, you're the same as them. Like everyone's very unique and different.
Yeah. I think that if people love cinematography and narrative and RPGs, it's always going to be around the kind of the Red Deads, the God of Wars, the, you know, those kinds of games are always going to get lifted off there, I think. But I'm not hugely, I went to Insomnia 65 or 60, Insomnia 63. And walking around with some of the guys that work there, and they asked me about the games that I loved. And I said, I'm really excited for the new Spider-Man game. I've got the new God of War and Assassin's Creed comes out soon. And they just went, you're really a basic bitch when it comes to games, aren't you? And I was like, yes, I am. Yep. I really am. They're AAA for a reason, mate. No one's playing your indie cardboard cutout game for a reason.
I mean, you're a cinema guy. You like getting immersed in a story, so that makes sense. And then the last question we ask everyone about their gaming life is, what is your greatest ever gaming achievement?
Oh my goodness. I actually give myself a pat on the back when I complete a game because I don't give myself enough time to play a game. By the time I'm getting towards the end, the next game's come out that's amazing that everyone's talking about, so I get that. So I'd say completing Red Dead Redemption, probably, because it was a really long game. And I just loved it. I loved every minute of playing it, and it was exciting. So I don't really... Getting Diamond on Apex Legends is probably another one.
And soon it will be beating Ian Chambers on Royal Stadium America, hopefully. We'll see.
Oh, it's Ian Chambers you were talking about. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about Killer Pigeon. Isn't his name Ian?
No, he's Darren.
Whoops. Sorry, Badarren. Badarren.
I thought it was Killer Penguin for the longest time. So I'm sure he won't mind too much.
But oh, yeah. He was a lovely guy to work with. But yeah, Ian Chambers. Yeah, I had a chat with him, and I was pinging him some messages about when he was going to go to the Rainbow Six Invitational and stuff to say good luck. But yeah, seems like a really nice guy. We've never actually met in person.
Mario Kart 64, handsome hosts.
The 64 showdown.
We'll work it out. But that's gaming life growing up. Let's go back round. We spoke about TikTok. We spoke about Lovely Rocket and being a parent.
Yeah.
You managed to go viral doing very menial tasks, but in a fun way around your baby. Do you want to explain how that started and how it blew up?
You basically hit it in a nutshell, actually. That was really good. Menial tasks and making them exciting. Essentially, what I did was I got a Musical.ly account when it first came out, which is what TikTok was called previously. Just because it was a new social media that had popped up, everyone was screaming out for a replacement for Vine, and Instagram was becoming saturated. So I created a Musical.ly account, posted 3 times maybe, got bored, didn't like the idea of having to add another social media account to my roster of social media accounts that I was creating, purely because Instagram, we mentioned the modeling industry earlier, the modeling industry relies heavily on having a good Instagram account as well. If you have a good following, you're more likely to be picked for a job. Or if you have your portfolio on your Instagram, it helps you get work as well. So you're using Instagram as part of your job. Having to add something like Musical.ly or TikTok to it just became a bit of a chore. So I stopped using it for ages. Had a meeting with an agent of mine who said, by the way, TikTok's now blowing up. This is years later. TikTok is blowing up. You should just recycle some of your content from Instagram onto TikTok, because I was prone to making videos rather than just taking images and putting them onto Instagram. So I said, okay, I'll try doing that. Recycled some of the more model-y, you know, videos onto TikTok. Ugh, horrible to think about the cringy videos you'd have to do. And then I just, you know, it fell into the ether, wasn't really bothered. And then I had Rocket with Jamie, and about 3 weeks later, I'm changing his nappy and I'm singing to him and acting like a right idiot, dancing from left to right, seeing if I can get him to laugh. He was far too young to start laughing at the time. But, you know, I'm just being an idiot, being a dad. And Jamie's mum, who was around at the time, said, you should film that because that's really funny. And I thought, oh yeah, maybe I'll film it, you know, whatever. And then the next time I changed his nappy, and he had just done an absolute punami. And it had just exploded out of his nappy, down his legs, you know, up his back. You could see it through his outfit. And I was like, oh God, this might be quite funny to film. So I just propped my camera up against the wall behind where his head was on this like cushion that we were changing him on. And started changing him, singing, being an idiot. And I was like, I'll put that on TikTok, because that's not really what my Instagram is about. My Instagram's more modelly and more cringy. And posted that on TikTok. And then the next day I just went, oh yeah, I posted on TikTok yesterday. Let me click on it. And I had 100,000 followers.
And I went, 100,000 followers?
Yeah, followers.
Not views.
And I was like, what? And the video had 2.5 million views.
That's outrageous.
I was like, what is going on? Is this actually my account? So I'm going through the settings. I'm like, is this my account? Is this my email? Have I just hacked someone by mistake? No, it's my video. Okay, what do I do? And then I looked at my partner, and Jamie was like, make another one. And so, okay. So got, you know, the next time Rocket went to the loo, you know, made a similar one, sang a different song, acted like an idiot once again. It popped again, and it had, you know, 400,000 views in the first hour. And I was like, what is going on? And then this kind of kept happening. I was thinking, right, I have to create some slightly different content. I can't just change his nappy all the time on TikTok. So I come up with a strategy in my head, and I thought, right, I'll do a couple of those changing videos a week, because that's kind of a staple of the account, and that's the reason why it popped in the first place. So then I'll do some other, like making bottles for him, putting him in different outfits. Let's just do some fun stuff that we would do anyway. It's not like I'm forcing my baby to make content. We're just stuff that we would normally do, and then we'll just film it, and then I'll chop it up and add some music and make it fun. So kept doing that, and the growth kind of kept happening. And then I think, as this was in April of 2022 was when we started posting on TikTok. And after, I think by the time we got to end of July 2022, so that's where May, June, July, so it was 3 months, we hit 1 million followers.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then now it's February, end of Feb 2023, and we're on 1.8 million. So yeah, it's been a wild one. After, I mean, this is the weird thing. Yeah, it's a superficial, you know, industry, of course. You can spike and drop very, very easily on social media nowadays, especially a platform like TikTok that's, you know, the beast needs to be fed all the time. So we're constantly thinking about making new content, and it is a bit of a struggle sometimes to force yourself to, okay, what should we do today? Should we make a video? Because it's a daily thing. Mm-hmm. So it becomes quite taxing sometimes. And I never want it to get to a point where, you know, we feel like, you know, Rocket has to be involved in the video. So we're doing a lot of couples content as well, myself and Jamie. And, you know, she started posting similar things. Now she's on 140K on TikTok, so she's growing. And we're just trying to enjoy it as much as we can. And we never want it to become too much of a chore. We don't want to argue too much about it, because, you know, those things can happen as well. But we're really, it's really funny, and it's fun. And the doors that it has opened by having a successful account on TikTok have kind of improved every facet of our lives, whether it's esports, because my new agent, I've signed with an agency that's part of WME, and WME are essentially the biggest agency in the world. You know, they look after Dwayne Johnson, Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm not up there with them, trust me. But some of the names that they look after. So one of their digital marketing agencies called MVE Talent is who I'm with. And, you know, they just know everyone. The owner of the agency is Casper Lee, who's a YouTuber, really big YouTuber. Him and Joe Sugg own the agency. So I've got them as mentors. So they not only have all the experience on YouTube and social media in general, because they've been there, done that, they also have all the contacts that come with it. So they can have a sit down with you and you say, you know, I would like to reach out to this person, or I feel like I'd work well with this brand. And they go, okay, cool, we'll see if we can make it happen.
So you're quite a versatile host as well. So from their point of view, you're a good person to have on the books, because you can essentially host anything, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not linked to a game.
Exactly.
You're not linked to a particular industry. Like you said, you're doing esports, but like you could host a show unrelated to esports. You could do anything.
Yeah. And fortunately for me, Casper, who owns the agency, is actually a huge fan of CSGO. Ugh. So he actually has a couple of contacts in there. But ultimately, they hired me onto their agency, or they signed me as one of their talent for their agency because of the social media side of things. And then anything additional from the host perspective is just a bonus. So definitely works really well. I'm glad to be with them. And being able to bounce from creating hosting esports events, and then in between hosting esports events, I can focus 100% on things like social media and be able to earn a living from it, is just a huge plus. So I've actually got this two-pronged career path, basically, where one side is TikTok, and we also have a YouTube channel now, a family YouTube channel, and a podcast, like we've spoken about earlier. So it's all go, go, go. Trying to ride the wave.
And you do behind-the-scenes stuff as well, some videography.
Yes.
In fact, you helped with this podcast.
Yeah.
Recommending the lenses and things like that. So
if you like the look of this podcast, send me a DM saying how much you love it.
Feel free. Good luck finding you, though.
Yeah.
That was something I did want to ask about, actually.
Yeah.
So when we first got to work together, which was Games Without Borders, they're like, you're going to be working with Banks. I was like, oh, great. Fantastic. Can't wait to
I know
bank.
Where this is going.
And genuinely couldn't find you.
Yeah.
Couldn't find you anywhere because I didn't know it was Barney Banks.
Yeah.
But then we got connected, I think, on WhatsApp. So we...
Yes.
Even then, I couldn't find you. I was like, I know his name's Barney. I know he's known as Banks.
Yeah.
You think Barney Banks would be easy to then find. And I guess I just didn't look hard enough because I obviously found you now.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, finding Banks Esports is a big problem for you.
Yes. So... this is one thing that you kind of get caught up in a little bit trying to be a talent in any industry, is establishing a brand for yourself, which is such a cringy thing to say, but ultimately it is what you're doing. And when you're establishing a brand, you've got to name that brand. What better way to name your brand than to use your actual name? So my surname is Banks. I went into the industry with my first job working for Clash of Clans saying, you know, how do you want to be addressed on camera? I said, well, Barney. And then we did our first dress rehearsal, and one of the one of the casters, but also someone from Supercell, the company that was running the show, came up to me and said, Barney's just not resonating on camera. I don't know what it is. It's just them saying, throwing to Barney. It just doesn't sound right. And I was like, okay, well, I don't mind. I'm fairly easygoing. This is my first esports job, so I'm not going to ruffle any feathers. And one of the casters had, by mistake, called me Banks. And had gone, going over to Banks, I mean, Barney. And the person from Supercell said, why don't we use Banks and see how that goes? And I was like, yeah, that's absolutely fine with me. I don't care. Little did I know that there is a host in esports by the name of James Banks, who also goes by Banks and has coined Banks Esports on Twitter. And essentially, he is the guy that's known as Banks in the esports world, especially in Europe. And, you know, just so happens to work for arguably the biggest esport there is, Counter-Strike. So every time I get booked on a job and Banks is on the list, the stage manager, who would be my point of contact on the stage, who helps me, who gives me the, you know, walk on now, come off now, brings me the mic, all that stuff, was like, where's James Banks? When I turned up and I said, sorry to disappoint, but it's me, I'm Barney. I just also go as Banks. So that's the story. And it's very unfortunate that now, 5 years into my esports career, I'm starting to think of changing my name on screen, but I don't know if it'll matter too much.
I mean, people have changed their names before. Medic in the LEC, I think he's in.
Okay.
He used to go by a character in League of Legends as his name on camera. Oh. The moment he went onto the official Riot streamer to change it.
Yeah, of course.
Change it to Medic, you know.
I don't really think it ruffles too many feathers. I my name. I wanted it to be Barney from the get-go.
So we're going
to
go
Supercell?
Barney? Is it going to be Barney? I think Barney.
I don't mind Barney. I think I'm like, how hard is it to say two syllables, guys? I think that Barney originally, I don't think anyone else is called Barney in the esports world.
I don't know of any Barneys. Well, I mean, now
I think
you've got
there's two other Bankses as well. I think there's James Banks and there's actually another one as well. But well, I don't like think
maybe I've, a player, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think I've come across them yet.
Well, I think if you were to change it now,
yeah,
I don't think anyone would be too frustrated. No. I think they'd be like, I understand, this makes sense.
And like you've mentioned before as well, I'm not necessarily affiliated with a particular esport. I mean, the only one you could really argue that would be Clash of Clans, maybe, because that's the one that I've worked with the most, I'd say, for the past 4 or 5 years. But because I'm not ingrained in RLCS or ingrained in Rainbow Six or, you know, whatever it is, I get brought in to stage host most of the time. Mm. So, and being a desk host, you're normally affiliated with a certain game, but stage host, it's just when a particular game decides to have a big tournament where they have a main stage and an audience, I'll get brought in to man the stage.
Well, I've been doing the Pokemon trading card game commentary recently. Mm. And with that, it was interesting because they use real names. All the players, all the casters all use their real names.
Wow.
So I had to go over and be Mike Ellis. And that was a whole new thing. So I'm getting called Mike at an esports or gaming event in my head. I was like, this feels really weird. Like, this isn't my name in this kind of place.
Someone says Mike and you're like...
Yeah, it's like, that's my real name.
Oh, wait,
my...
you mean me?
So yeah, that's a unique one when you change your name and go on camera somewhere else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Barney is not changing your name, is it?
I don't think it's too bad. And I also think that, I know that Banks has a bit more of like a punch, and I think that people enjoyed that, and they're like, oh, we can, you know, Banks is, yeah, no. I'm picking up my own name, not really. Barney just, I don't know, sounds a bit flaky sometimes. If the wrong person says it and they go, we're going to head over to Barney on the stage.
Barney.
It's like, what? Really? There's a guy called Barney on the main stage?
Yeah. I can see why Barney might not be as popular, but I think Barney's a cool name. It's unique, original.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll figure it out. I'm hoping that when I do a slightly bigger tournament this year, I'm trying to, you know, like we all try and do, I'm trying to outplay every year that I do in esports. So I set myself targets of, you know, this is the amount of esports, you know, competitions I want to do this year, next year. Right. This is what I want to do. And I vary it up. This year, my goal is to do a job in America, an esports job in America. I don't know where, when or how or who it'll be, but
make sure you do it right. Visas are a fun thing.
Yes. I've heard I had to get a visa for Jakarta. I did a job in Jakarta in January.
You've just named a place and I don't know if I know where that is.
Ooh, capital of Indonesia.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's why I was in Bali in January. I went to Bali for 3 weeks because I worked in Jakarta for a week.
That makes
very
sense.
Fun.
I mean, that is the first and probably only time Jakarta will be brought up on this podcast, I reckon.
They have a huge esports network out there, as in like the fan base is insane.
Mm.
And I was hosting the PUBG Mobile Global Invitational. And that was Global Championships, in fact. And it was insane. The crowd were so loud. It was brilliant.
Well, I do want to take a step back from esports everything, and I want to ask you about the challenges associated with your career and being a parent. We had Frankie on. Frankie spoke a bit about some of the challenges she had as a mother. I think you, in particular, you're at Gamers 8 where we met, and you're out there for 6 weeks.
Yeah, 6 weeks.
And that was in the formative years of Rocket, like very early on, the first months. How was that for you, and how has being a parent whilst doing your career been?
I think we'll start with career. So I think that career has, luckily I have a very, very supportive partner, Jamie, who she understands the industry. I think that's one of the key factors. I've had previous relationships where they just don't quite get the industry and understand how fly by the seat of your pants it is. So with Jamie, she's been a performer her whole life. She's a DJ. She understands that last minute stuff happens, and sometimes you have to travel with work. And I think she just understood that Gamers 8, Games Without Borders, all these kinds of big competitions that are starting to happen that are abroad for a number of weeks is a huge stepping stone in my career and is beneficial, you know, 360. Would I have liked to have gone to Gamers 8 for 2 weeks, fly home for a week and then fly back out? Yes. But unfortunately, the stars just didn't align that way. They said, it's almost like I got a bit of a ultimatum of you either come out for the whole thing or don't bother. And they didn't explicitly say that, but little did I know, I thought I was going for a week. And when I got there, my first week, which was with Rocket League, was a trial, and I didn't know this. So because Rocket League then went well, they said, okay, save the whole thing.
It went very well.
I went, okay.
That's quite a scary.
Yeah, scary because Rocket was 3 months at the time. So when I got home after the 6 weeks, he was 4.5 months. He was sitting up by himself. He looked like a different baby. So that came with a big sacrifice of missing that month and a bit of his life. But also, yeah, like I said, it was a huge factor in a growth period of my career. Jamie understood it. We came up with a plan of how to tackle it. My family and Jamie's family were both very hands-on and really helpful, which was amazing. A lot of people didn't know, but I was actually moving house as well while I was at Gamers 8. So that was a massive thing that she had to undertake by herself as well. So I'm really grateful that she took it all on, and I took as much on as I could from, you know, my hotel room in Riyadh, trying to just do as much organization as I could. And then speaking on that, organization is really how it's affected my life and my career. I have to be very, very much more organized now, having a child and having a career that has two different pathways. But because of the careers that we've chosen, we're extremely lucky that we get a lot of face time at home with Rocket. So neither of us have 9-to-5s. We both work from home. The only time I'm not at home is if I'm away for an event. And that's not that much in the year. In the grand scheme of things, I would say I'm away from home maybe 4 months of the year in total. So, you know, that includes going and doing DreamHack, which is 4 days. And then all the way from that to doing a Gamers 8, which can be 6 weeks. And then everything in between, I guess
like a day in London.
Yeah, I guess everything built up, it's probably looking at about 4 months away from home of the year. So I still get 8 months at home, full time, all the time at home to spend with my son. So I actually feel really fortunate. And it sounds to a lot of people like 8 weeks away from home from your kid, that must be so hard. It was really hard. Of course, it was really hard. But I'm also in a really fortunate position that I get to. Especially now with the whole TikTok thing, because this was a year ago where my TikTok was only starting to grow when I was at Gamers 8. We were approaching the million mark while I was at Gamers 8. And now that, you know, I signed to an agency and the ball is rolling with, you know, sponsored work and working with brands and stuff like that, I am almost in a position where I can pick and choose which esports events that I do, purely on the basis that I can earn money from home and I'm not having to go to an esports event to earn money. It's not like I want to pick and choose esports events. Every time an esports event comes knocking, I'm always saying yes, because that's a priority for me. And the longevity that I see in my career is with esports, not necessarily social media. So unless the podcast explodes, Greg, and both of us, our podcast is going to blow up and we're going to do this for a living, sitting in our living room, chilling.
I mean, speaking of podcasts, yes. So you've got a new podcast.
I do.
I wanted to ask you, can you spell out the beginning of your podcast? How many H's and...
Yeah, I know. One S, three H's and three dots.
So you do know.
So shh, don't tell mum. So this is the reason why we bloody did this. I had a plan, like we've already spoken about last year in July about podcasts. I had a plan to create a podcast where I interview dads and we talk about dad life. And it was going to be called Don't Tell Mum. So the idea was going to be me sitting down with a dad, like, you
don't
know,
gesture
what,
at me like, what, I've
yeah,
got
a, like a dad. You like got a, the beard. Come on. So if we go into a conversation, what crazy things have you done with your kid that maybe she doesn't know about? So it's the kind of Don't Tell Mum thing. Two dads shooting the shit. And I got down to, I filmed my first episode, had a place to shoot it all, things like that. And then just the realization of having to get the train into London every single time I wanted to do an episode, to a location, paying for that location, paying for an editor. There was so much gunk that came with it. And then I thought, we have the facilities at home to do this. My partner is a podcast producer. That's one of her jobs, as well as being a DJ. I know about video editing. She knows about audio. Why don't we just do it at home and I'll do it with Jamie? I'd already created all the assets for it. So I said, let's just call it Don't Tell Mum. Let's keep the name. And we posted our first episode on Wednesday last week. And Jamie just went on Spotify after posting it and typed in Don't Tell Mum. And there was like 20 other podcasts called Don't Tell Mum. And I hadn't checked. She was like, did you check that there were any other podcasts called Don't Tell Mum? And I said, well, yeah, obviously I did. She was like, well, you obviously didn't because there's like 20 of them. So we just decided to go, shh, Don't Tell Mum, because that was the soundbite that I created for the opening and the closing of the podcast that's going to go on YouTube. It just goes, shh, Don't Tell Mum.
And shh is traditionally quite a hard word to spell.
I know. So if people try to look it up, just type Don't Tell Mum. And then type Barney and Jamie or something, and then it'll pop up. So yeah, it's just me and Jamie talking. We do plan on having guests on the podcast at some point, but that will be at a different location because our cubby hole that we film the podcast in only just about fits two people. Mm-hmm. So won't have space for a third and a microphone.
We can rent out this
studio. Exactly. I love it. It's very cool. This wall is so real.
Uh-huh. Well, you were the first person to come in and go, oh, fake wall.
Yeah.
Most people are like, oh, I didn't realize it was fake until you mentioned it.
But. Oh, I mean, but you know what? Obviously a lot of time, a lot of effort and thought has gone into creating this. So I appreciate it that you've, and you know, you are a cerebral person, I would say. So I definitely thought that you would have a lot of psychological input into the way that your podcast is presented. So, and I'm glad you did because it's great.
Well, you mentioned about the kind of struggles you had with forming the podcast. I think there was a lot of stuff I resonated with there. I think the big thing, maybe the learning from that, because we do like to take some things away from this. We're not just people doing content and bragging about it. Like there's a lot that goes into things, a lot more than a lot of people realize. And it's that 6 month period before you ever see the first episode that people don't think about. You mentioned you started in July.
Yeah.
I released, well, first episode was December and I started forming this probably the end of the previous year. Maybe early that year.
Wow.
So it was almost a year it took to form it, which I did test recordings, redesigned it all, create the brand, looked up, try and find if there was other podcasts maybe on the game, which there are, but we were like, we can beat them.
This is happening. By the way, that is the best mentality to have because I said, you know, she said, but there's other podcasts called Don't Tell Mum. I'm like, yeah, and ours is going to be better. So don't worry about it.
You just got to have something in there. So ours is Beyond the Game with Gregan. Just in case.
With Mike Ellis.
For the Pokemon people.
For the Pokemon people.
But yeah, that whole formative period, I think, is something that's very unique in content that people just see the final product and forget there's a whole journey behind that. And also the investment of time, knowledge. Like I had to ask you for help. I had to ask various audio friends for help. You know, I had a guy who's done a lot of production, a guy called Charlie Roxburgh. I hope you're going to get him on as well.
Nice.
He connected me with the set design, all this kind of stuff.
Dude, you're a set designer, get on it. Nice.
Yeah.
To be honest, though, amazing. If you're going to do it the right way. Exactly. That's what you've got to do. Contact audio people for the right audio. And that also stems from not getting half inched when you're trying to actually get some equipment and someone overcharges you. They go, these microphones will work. Don't need to get the best ones as long as you do a bit of post-production on the mics, all that kind of stuff. And you don't have to buy cameras that are £1,000 each. You know, you can get you can get three cameras for £1,000 that will be good enough for YouTube or for Spotify. You know,
especially
whatever
if you're doing a podcast.
Yeah,
Don't have to go. I mean, you mentioned earlier some of your camera like the stuff you've done for that one. You've got your old camera, and I didn't even notice. Like, you're the only one who probably notices. I was like, oh, this looks really cool. I'm gonna
when
ask
you turn
you about-
it into vertical video, I just, it's a bit grainy, my one, and the reason is it's a fairly old DSLR, but it's also not the best lens, and I can't find any other lens to use for it. But anyway, that's another story. That's just a giant pain. We will get there. But yeah, also, it's nice for your audience to see the progression. Mm. I mean, eventually you might do a Stephen Bartlett and have a tracking cam that goes from left to That'd right constantly. He has a camera that just goes left and right constantly on a tracker that's just on a little motor that just goes, so he can have like a panning shot.
My biggest envy of Stephen Bartlett is having someone to do research, because I had to go through all your social medias and model pages, you know.
Yeah.
Also, you're on famous birthdays.
That is ridiculous. Why? Though. They messaged me when they did that, and I was like, why am I on famous birthdays?
That was
fun. Share a birthday with Zac Efron, apparently.
There you go.
So people aren't going to be looking me up on that day. But
I didn't even mention the thing you're most famous for now, which is your TikToks. I mean, I know to say you're famous for it, a friend of mine has just gone quite viral on TikTok too. They're in that same sort of journey you're on early on. And they were saying they've been on dating apps now, because their content's based around dating. They've been on dating apps, so people are like, oh, you're that person on TikTok.
Wow.
And it's like, even though people don't know you, but they'll recognize the face. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are watching this who'd be like, oh, that's that guy with the baby.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I mean, I went to the pub recently, and then when I got home, which was only a 5-10 minute drive, by the time I got home, I had a DM from someone that said, I just saw you at the pub. Was that you? You're the guy with the baby. And I was like, yeah, that was me. Weird, someone was watching me in the pub and I didn't realise. It's a little bit weird. But I imagine it's probably going to happen. I thought that at some point I'm probably going to be invited to some... You know how when we go to gaming events and there's always people are doing signings, it's always like one of the Sidemen, or it's someone that's big on a Minecraft server and they go and they sell merch and they do signings. I was like, am I going to get invited to like the Mothercare one where people like, there's like an at the XL in London where they're selling baby stuff, or like you go to a trade show. It's going to be me sat in the middle. Like,
That is the dream partnership right there. Getting a...
Well, I have a partnership that's like the one that I was hoping for when it all popped off, and it's started. Yeah. Pampers.
Pampers.
Yeah.
That is the dream sponsorship of any parent out there.
Isn't it?
Do you spend any money on
nappies? So when they want me to post content, they send me a pack of nappies.
Okay.
And if there's like a clause, Well, I said to them, look, if there's a clause before and after the content being posted, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're doing brand sponsored videos or brand sponsored content, they say to you, you need to not use any opposing brands or brands within the same forum as us for 3 months after you post this video. So you've got to give me 3 months worth of nappies then. And so that's the kind of conversations that you have, and you go, well, then why would you send me one pack of nappies? You should send me like 3 or 4. And it's not me being greedy, it's that'll last 3 months. So it's just there's a logical side to it as well that sometimes needs addressing. But yeah, it's very interesting to go, funnily enough, my TikTok went viral because of changing nappies. I wonder if a nappy brand is going to get in touch. And then sure enough, it happened about 6 months in.
That's crazy.
That's silly.
Well, if a coffee brand wants to get involved, ooh, I always have a coffee on.
Yeah, you cover it up. I've taken the label off. Same place, if you can figure it out.
Yeah, anyone work it out. Yeah, I mean, that's always the fun side of content, is where's it going to go? What's next? And I guess that's the question for you. What's next for Barney in brackets Banks?
Ooh, Barney or Banks. I would say, trying to further pursue the esports career is always first and foremost for myself. I love the industry that I get to work in. I love the people that are in it. I love that it's growing. I love that it's piquing interest from all sides of the world now, and that we're kind of becoming a bit more inclusive with the entire world. I mean, I was at IEM, the Intel Extreme Masters, recently in Poland, and there was a big stage for Impact, which is the female CSGO league, and they've played so, they're doing such amazing things on there, and the documentary style filming they're doing for it as well. Gucci is now involved in the gaming industry.
I think they got the esports award for the best brand in esports as well.
Yeah, there's so many amazing things happening within esports. So I'm just really fortunate that I kind of came in at the right time, I feel like, for myself. And so I think the future for me is focusing on that and then creating this kind of family brand on the social media side of things with my partner, Jamie, who is really helping on everything. She's really striving to make our YouTube and our podcast grow, which is I'm really happy with. And then we get to do it from home. So then the more that we can do from home regarding the social media side of things, the more time we can spend with our son. And so that's just kind of a win-win. So I think the future for me is just to continue what I'm doing at a better scale and just constantly improve.
Well, it's been great having you on.
Thank you, mate.
It's been one of my favorite podcasts just because your energy is is amazing. And I think that's why your podcast is going to be so good. I loved listening to it. The synergy you two had and the kind of humor you have. I think one of my favorite moments was pound in the jar.
Oh gosh. So funny. She's like, we can't swear on our podcast. It's a family podcast. We have a son. He's almost one. We have to just not swear. And just me and Jamie were just firing off swear words the whole time watching it back. We were just cringing like, oh, we're not going to be able to do this. We're going to have to just include swearing. And it is what it is. We're not PG parents and we're not afraid of it, so it's fine.
But you put a pound in the jar.
We're actually going to get a jar, by the way. We're going to get one and have it in the middle. I just want it to go every time you put it in because that would just really disrupt the audio. But yeah, we're figuring it out.
So if you want to check out the podcast,
shhh, don't tell mom.
Go check that out if you want to hear great stories about being parents, but also you talk about all sorts of other things. And
yeah. Our life in that week. It's basically a week in the life podcast edition. And then the YouTube stuff is once a week as well. We post the podcast in three parts onto YouTube. And then, but if you want to watch it once the way through, it's on Spotify as well.
Lovely. Well, I hopefully get to see more of you in esports, maybe work alongside you at some point again.
Definitely.
Maybe a future Gamers 8 of some sort. Maybe we'll see.
Indeed.
Hopefully both of us get to go back. But there's so many events that I feel like you'd be perfect for. And hopefully anyone out there who's interested in getting a second Banks on the show, better known as Barney.
Barney. Yeah, that's right. The reason why I couldn't find the TikToks is because it's I am Mr. Banks.
You are.
That's why.
I mean,
I need to have one consistent name for everything, don't I?
Yeah, you shot yourself in the foot.
Bye, everyone.
So we end the podcast with the same question.
Oh,
what does gaming mean to you?
Oh, escape. In one word, it's just escape. It's a way to sit down after a long day of doing whatever it is you've been doing, whether it's being at the gym, parenting, working, and you can shut off while gaming, which sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? Because you feel like the mental stimulation of sitting down in front of a screen and playing something that can be frantic, whether it's Call of Duty all the way through to an RPG. But it's still a way of escapism and just shutting off everything else and just engrossing yourself in a game. So I just love that.
Wow. You can now escape on Fute and I'll catch you later.
Catch you later, mate.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.